Shubham, you wanna create a quantum company now? It's gonna be tough because you have to first, you know, actually get really funding. Most, it's just the big corporations. No, like, keep in mind, they say yes, let's do it because, you know, they don't want to miss out. There's a huge, like, since this huge investment by Germany, there's a huge FOMO, huge fear of missing out from all DAX companies. So, but fundraising is an art, man. It's all about the relationships. It's really time consuming. It's an art, and it's about the relationships for sure. So this is extremely unfair, but this is the truth, in my opinion, from what I've seen, that a lot of these people who build huge businesses, they already were at least middle class or well off, and they always had this feeling of safety.
Welcome to the second episode of The Beginning of Infinity. Today, we have an amazing speaker as a guest who is a serial entrepreneur. He has successfully exited his first company and now has moved on to, you know, being a CEO of another tech company, which is in the quantum domain. His first company, where he was providing alerts of all the wheel transactions of stock market. Now, he is providing an amazing platform for which you can optimize your transactions, or let's say your operations, very well. We had an amazing conversation, and it is my privilege and honor to present to you all Daniel Radke. This whole podcast was about the challenges he faces being the CEO of a quantum tech company, and he has successfully raised 3.5 million euros, which is a huge amount. He talked about the journey of that and how it is very challenging on getting funding to such tech startups where you have a hockey kind of a curve where you don't see progress for a really long time. He shared about his platform, his journey, his challenges. There's been a huge learning. I hope you also take something back from it. So without taking a much due, welcome to our second episode of
Infinity. So you're from Germany, right? How is it? Like, awesome. So how is that? How is it has been in Germany, like, pretty much?
Right now it's lately. It's gotten extremely cold. I mean, but it was interesting. Like, November is usually, it already starts in October, November, right? Usually it gets really cold. But like this time we had a few weeks in November that was super warm. I'm like, holy shit, it's still half summer. And it's so strange. I mean, it's the climate, right? And but now it's gotten like, it just dropped down and I'm like sitting here with a jacket, you see? Because I mean, yeah. We're building heating and stuff like that over there. So it's a long story, but that's kind of the main thing. No, but in general, I mean, Germany, it's been great. I can just jump right into quantum stuff. Like Germany, like one thing that I really find about like strategically about Germany really interesting, how they invested 2 billion in quantum. And it's like right with AI, like the US really, like they're the front, right? And they did it really well. They invested really early, really well, and they did it really well. And I feel like Germany kind of, you know, they were late with the AI, honestly. Just in one sentence, they were late. But with quantum, I think they're this time. Of course, the US is also investing. Canada is really good at it. But like this time, they're doing a really great job, in my opinion. So that's one thing that I really, that's really that they did really well. And yeah, so it's good. And it's been helpful that they invest, and they're one of the best, like in Europe as well, one of the biggest investments in Europe as well. So.
Yeah, interesting. So I was about to say that, right? As you said, Germany is pretty cold. I was like, isn't that ideal for you?
Yeah.
So what is your relationship with quantum? And like, you know, what's the relationship behind quantum?
Yeah. So quantum is an interesting story how I got into it. So like I was doing my master's degree, and it was kind of random. So I started actually in AI. So I was planning to do a PhD really in AI. And the lab where I was working in, the professor, she's really good at finding the next trend, and she's kind of nimble, right? So she always kind of goes also where the new interesting topics are, where the money is, let's say, you know. And basically she did many years of AI, but now with quantum, with the huge investment by Germany and so on, she decided, okay, we're going to open up a new lab, which is going to do quantum. And actually, they did it already kind of a long time ago. But this now they actually ramped it up and said, okay, let's really focus on quantum as well. So I was like, okay, yeah. So she has two labs, basically, one AI, one quantum. And I was like, okay, interesting. Then she told me, look, Daniel, you should go into quantum because that's where everyone is going now. And we're focusing on that. And I was like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to do it. And that's kind of how I got into it. Kind of my professors told me, okay, you know, this is where it's interesting to go to. And I'm like, okay, let's take a look. And then I took a look. I did a lot of like projects at the lab. I did my master's thesis also in quantum. And I really like, for 1.5 years, I really went deep into it. And I was always at this intersection between like AI, let's say AI and quantum. So I was using machine learning techniques to see, okay, how can we pull out more power from the current quantum technologies, which are, you know, as you've probably read or seen, they're good. I mean, you can already do like interesting, really interesting POCs, but they're not, obviously they're not like there yet, right? Like they're not really like, you cannot solve climate change with them yet, right? So they're not completely there yet.
Oh, sure.
But this is kind of how I got into it, and I stuck with it. And the thing is, like, when she told me about this, I was like instantly hooked on it because, look, we had like back then, like 1980 or whatever, you know, it's such a long time ago. We had classical compute, right? We had this personal computers, classical compute, and everything like this ramping up, and it took many years. And I was like, holy shit, you know what? This is an amazing opportunity because I can be there, but with quantum now, the same thing, you know, I can live through the same thing and be like one of the first guys, one of the pioneers to join and, you know, do research or build things. And I was like, that's it. I gotta do it. And I feel like a lot of also like I have a company, I'm a shareholder at Aquarius, which is a quantum computing company. And a lot of the engineers there, quantum engineers, they had like, they're all hype about it because one of the things, one of the motivations, obviously, is that you're one of the pioneers building like this new revolution. Like you had the classical compute, that was like a whole revolution. Obviously, we're sitting right now I have a MacBook and, you know, it's amazing. It's so thin. It's amazing, right? And the same thing, like being one of the first guys building up this quantum, that's a huge one. So that's that's how I kind of got into it and stuck with it. And I completely believe in it. Like it's gonna take a while, I believe, but it's gonna be. It's you already see like the things, you know. You already see the first, let's say, small gold nuggets coming out. It's pretty good.
Awesome. So if I have to sum it up, so it is pretty much your faculty or your mentor or your teacher inspired you.
Yeah. Exactly.
To try out quantum because quantum will be the biggest thing in the future because once it rolls out, it'll definitely be disruptive.
Definitely, for sure.
So because you have worked on AI and you have worked on quantum, so what do you think will be when you combine AI with quantum? Because quantum is matrix operations, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it depends. It's two things, right? Well, many things. So, of course, yes, you can. There's one way of, you know, you use quantum to improve AI. That's one direction, let's say, of course. I was always working the other direction. So how to use current machine learning techniques to, you know, because with the current compute, let's take the D-Wave machine. It has like... only a few thousand qubits, right? So the latest one that we work with has 5,000. So you cannot really run huge problems on there, like maybe a small traveling salesman problem with like 20, 30 cities or whatever, right? It's a very small problem. But what you can do is use ML to optimize before you actually run stuff on the machine to optimize some parameters, you know, to optimize or even just to have a model that predicts, okay, that just predicts, is this problem that you just gave me even suitable for quantum? Is this, you know, simple or tough enough? Is this even interesting for quantum? Just having this layer in front. And this is kind of the direction that I really have done quite a lot of work in. But the other direction is valid as well. And that's one of the, let's say, also hype topics, of course, to use at some point when quantum scales up to become, you know, really interesting, to use it to you know, make our current then at that point, our current AI even more, even strong, even build even huge, bigger models and stuff like that. So yes, both directions are very interesting.
Got it. So you were talking about D-Wave quant, D-Wave machines, and with a few thousand qubits. But is that publicly available for people to use? Because
what I actually know- yes, actually yes. You can get one free. I think you at least a few months ago it was still available. You can get one free QPO minute if you sign up at the D-Wave thing at the D-Wave website. But that's really it. After that, it costs, and it's quite costly. That's the thing. That's one of the things which makes it also a bit, I think, tough to break into the industry right now is the huge cost of the machines. Obviously you cannot buy one because like, I think one D-Wave machine costs like more than $10 million, right? You cannot buy that. So they do have this cloud access, which I just talked about. You can get one free QPU minute, and that's not so much. So you cannot really, you can run a few tests, you know, you can do a few things, right? You can spend, let's say, a Sunday on it, but then it's gone, right? So, but even the cloud costs are really, really costly. So you're going to be paying like half of your, you know, you're going to be paying a lot of money, like thousands of euros per month, just to have this access to all. And it's all the same for all of the machines, which makes sense, of course, right? I mean, they're so, so costly to create. There's not many of them. There's a lot of demand right now coming up. So obviously the economics are not so good in that regard. So it is tough if you say, look, Shubham, you wanna create a quantum company now. It's gonna be tough because you have to first, you know, actually get really funding. This is one of the companies where I'm like, okay, this is not like the standard, let's say, B2B SaaS where you can bootstrap and you kind of start going and you get the first customers. Here you have to first go to investors, you know, get some funding, and then you can actually start. And before that, you're kind of lost, honestly. So yeah.
Got it. So D-Wave is available just for a minute, but then you...
Yeah.
So how about IBM Quantum? Is it...
They don't have these 3 minutes. IBM is costlier. IBM is one of the, I think... one of the ones that costs the most, basically. Okay. So IBM is really... and you don't have any free. I think the same, by the way, Amazon also has Rigetti access. This one's interesting because if I recall, you can just start using it. So it's not like you don't have these huge monthly contracts, but you can actually, if we go to, you know, Amazon bracket is what it's called, you can just start using it and just pick like $50 and just start, you know, testing stuff with it. But it's not free, obviously. It's not free, but you can also start using it just if you take a little bit of money, let's say.
But what I heard about IBM Quantum was when I used to do it, it was a year or something back. It was pretty much free for you, but you need to wait in the queue for that.
Oh yeah, the queues are insane. Yeah. I mean, the queues are insane. I mean, if you are unlucky, then it can even take a day. it's truly insane. Yeah, yeah. I've heard some bad stories as well. And we had also a few stories here. And yeah, it's not so easy. But that's what I say, right? It's the demand. There's so much demand right now, and there're not enough machines because it's so costly to create them and stuff. So, and the thing is, right now, you also have this huge speed. Like every, let's say, I think D-Wave, every 1.5 years or so, you get a completely new, big, and like significantly bigger machine. So you can kind of like at some point scrap your old ones. And it's, why would you invest like today, 2022, why would you invest in like 100 D-Wave machines when, you know, like next year they're going to create a 7,000 qubit machine, right? Or like a 12,000 one, because that's what they're planning, right? So it's kind of tough, yeah, but you have to work with it, right? You have to work with it.
Got it. So tell me about Aquarius.
Aquarius. So Aquarius is completely on the software side. So we don't do any hardware. And basically, we use a lot of AI. So kind of what I talked before, right? So what we're doing is we're building a optimization platform. So a platform where we can run optimization problems and solve them. And what we do is we added, for example, a matching using AI as well, which basically, given one optimization problem, returns you the best combination of hardware provider and solver algorithm. So we support at this point 4 hardware providers. That's like D-Wave, Rigetti, IBM, Fujitsu, more to come. So like IMQ, whatever they're called. And basically you send us, you know, a traveling salesman problem, basically, for example. And we take it, we do the matching, we solve it for you, or we just tell you what to use and you can solve it yourself. We have different APIs. And basically the first focus of this platform right now is to support developers. So it's basically lots of APIs. There's a panel, you know, where you can manage your access keys and stuff like that. The cool thing is what we abstract away, let's say, is all the contracts with the hardware providers. So that's what I talked about in the beginning. That's really not so easy to come up with. And obviously we add the matching, and then we add a lot of like really interesting utility APIs, like approximation. So for example, if you send us a problem, we give you the optimal approximation level. So, and that's not easy to define really, but we try, right? So how much, or maybe you can even say, look, I want you to approximate this cube or this problem and lose at max 5% of the solution quality. And then we give you this approximated, problem or solution, basically, whatever you want. And this is kind of, we're building this huge, let's say, basis as a platform where you can on top build anything you want with quantum technologies in the background. And then what we like to do is, and we've started doing this, we go into certain verticals like finance, for example, and on top of this platform, we build services. So for example, in finance, you have portfolio optimization. So you have a set of stocks and you want to weigh them in some way, right? So let's say you have Apple, Facebook, Google, you know, the big ones, and then, you know, you want to optimize the return. So how much percent of each should you have in your basket, right? So that's portfolio optimization, for example. And what we do is, we build a service on top of our platform where you can send portfolio optimization problems, so problem instances, and we do the rest, right? And you can then, you can say to the outside and to your investors, to your customers, look, we are quantum enabled. We're solving your portfolio optimization problems using quantum, using Aquarius in the background. So that's kind of like the idea. And in terms of like the business model, what we do is, so it's not just a platform. We're not just like one deep tech where you just pour in money to investors, but we're basically, we're doing 2 things at the same time. We're doing consulting. So we do a lot of contracts. We have, with big DAX companies here in Germany, we have a lot of contracts where we basically help them implement like real use cases, anything they want. So maybe you have something. So we're working, for example, with E.ON, with energy grid topics. So they give us like certain use cases in that, domain. Or we help people, companies with implementing their roadmap. So, just telling them, okay, this is your business units, and this business unit is the one that we think in the next 3 years could be interesting to look at in terms of the quantum. So this is where you could solve a few things really efficiently soon. And this is a business unit that's going to take like 10 years. Just keep it, in the back of your mind, but you don't need it right now. So this is what we help with, like on the consulting side, and we use the revenues from that to fund basically the platform development.
Yep, so I was about to say that, whether that pretty much, so all the consulting that you give may not be 100% on quantum. It can be even classical computing as well, or is it 100%?
We are focusing, it can be AI topics, of course, but we are focusing on quantum. It is really quantum. So, because the thing is, we want the synergies, right? So anything we do in the consulting gig, we want to take the knowledge, what we learned, and put it obviously in the platform, right? So anything we learn from the use cases, like maybe there's some use cases that are really tough to do on Quantum. We learn like there's some issues, you know, with the problem definitions or whatever. We want to keep this obviously for the platform. So this is why we like to really have this focus on Quantum. So any consulting gig should have Quantum, that's for sure.
Right. So that is, you can summarize Aquarius platform. So it is pretty much, it is a platform that attracts multiple hardwares, and
yeah,
where you can run your own code, or else you can start with Aquarius and they'll help you run the code, or they'll write the code for you and pretty much solve your problem, something like that.
You can say that. Basically, we have APIs that do that for you. So you can talk with the APIs and run with them and do whatever you want. So you can send problems to our API and we'll solve it. Or you can ask our API, basically, what solver algorithm should I use for this problem? And it's going to tell you that, or the approximation example that I just gave you. So yeah, all kinds of stuff, everything related to solving problems with Quantum, basically.
Got it. So my next question will be on this, on solving problem with Quantum, because now, as you said, you have a consultancy side of the business where you get the revenue and you pretty much put it for the development of the platform. But Quantum is something in India, at least it was new like 2 years back, but now it is pretty much in the boom. Like people are nowadays talking about it. So for you, how did you, was it also the same case for you that, you know, it suddenly, you know, picked up the peak and people started to know about there's something called as Quantum? If yes, then how did you find your initial clients, and how was the journey? Like, how did you convince them, you know, there's something called as Quantum and this can solve your problem?
Yeah. So it has, honestly, in Germany, it really picked up with the huge investment. So with the 2 billion investment, suddenly everyone was like, "Ooh, wow, there's so much money now, and we have to look into it." So suddenly the interest really picked up on that. So that's kind of from the business side. Also, we have a deep connection to the LMU Munich, to the university, because it is a spin-off out of the lab, right? Which I talked about before, I think before the podcast with you, like shortly, like basically what my story, like how I start with the lab and stuff. And the Quantum Lab here at LMU Munich, basically it's a spin-off out of that. And we have like this connection, we're getting like students, like top students and stuff like that. And we obviously, we collaborate on research, we write papers together. We published a few papers this year, for example, which is pretty great. So also there, we're slowly seeing more and more interest, but that's also mostly due to this good work of, you know, the professor. She's, you know, really pushing it and telling her students, take a look at Quantum. She's doing really interesting courses, like practical courses where they can just, she takes some in, like she invests some money, like university money. So students can really just, without worry, let's say, take a look and run stuff on Quantum. So for free, it's just, you know, it's part of the you know, they're just students, so they can do it. It's really, she's really putting in a lot of work there to kind of evangelize, let's say, you know, that, you know, this is the next big thing. And so kind of this is also now starting to pick up, that a lot of students are talking about it. We're getting more and more like people that are interested in joining Aquarius, you know, and just learning about Quantum in general, just because Quantum, right? And and like on the customer side, the thing is, we, due to our connection to the university, which is also, I think, very important, not just funding, but also having some university in the back, at least in Quantum. Like, again, for some random B2B SaaS, for some random startup, you don't really need a university in the back. But for Quantum, I would say, I would argue from what I've seen also, that this is at this stage really important in many ways, like research, getting good students. And now the most important part is getting these publicly funded government contracts as well, like getting into that and collaborating with LMU in a few of those really big publicly funded projects. One of them is, for example, called Cocoon. I think maybe write it in chat. That's the website, cocoon.de. That's a really big one. It has a volume of nearly 15 million euros. So it's a huge project, and Aquarius is a part of that. And a few, like a chunk of that belongs, let's say, to Aquarius. And getting into that, you get, so there's a few big DAX companies as partners. So that's already like, you have like, let's say an entry into the door is kind of, you know, you're in there. And then obviously just talking with DAX companies and, you know, through network or like just, you know, through the innovation units, through digital innovation units, you can talk with them and propose that, you know what, let's do a small project. Let's do a small workshop. Let's do like one use case. And often they say, okay, look, it's just a big corporation. So not, like, keep in mind, they say, yes, let's do it because, you know, they don't want to miss out. There's a huge, like, since this huge investment by Germany, there's a huge, huge FOMO, huge fear of missing out from all DAX companies. They're like, holy shit, what if my competitor does it and quickly? And we're like, you know, it's the same story as AI happens. I don't want to, you know, be left out. So this is why it's, I think it was at least, or it still is, a bit easier to get into it because, you know, huge investment and, you know, fear of missing out. And then, and this is how we got a few, like we got this huge public funded project. And then we got a few like bigger contracts with big corporations. And the rest is, you know, staying, you know, on top, doing sales and acquiring more and more of these interesting contracts. And yeah. So outreach and this network effect, let's say, by the university, I would say, are the two main things that helped us in the beginning and are still helping us, still helping.
I would say one is definitely you getting into the public, the government, is it funding? Like you getting approved of it, it definitely creates a brand.
And, yeah.
And you being incubated or let's say being collaborated with the university kind of brings you again authenticity a validity of your company and
exactly
you know all in all pretty much then brings you in touch with different tech giants and because pretty much you are in the limelight so that's
how exactly that's interesting. Lots of credibility, you know, and also and I cannot stress enough what's also important is to do research and to publish papers to get also scientific credibility that what you're doing there. So we published some modifications to algorithms, for example. We publish all kinds of stuff and or you know this just in general also theoretical research.
Okay, now what I want to do is you were saying that you know a lot of research papers and everything also adds to the credibility.
Yeah, exactly.
So now I want to get into a kind of service that you guys were providing. You said like in let's say for example you said at Aquarius we have a service where we kind of you know manage the portfolios or let's say if someone wants to manage the portfolio. So kind of going into the field of quantum finance, so was it something that was inspired from your love for finance?
Yes, I would say I would lie if I would say no. Look, I've been interested in like finance in general since I was a kid, honestly, because my dad was already kind of doing stuff that was stocks, you know, and I was like, this is so cool, you know. He was trading and stuff like that. And at some point I also started like just doing normal investments, like, you know, just investing in ETFs, I would say, but I also did some active trading as well. And this is where at some point I got this idea of Alpha Alerts, which was like one of the first basically, let's say, companies that I did with a good friend of mine. And like Alpha Alerts, in short, was about it was really simple. It was a B2B SaaS model, and basically it was alerts for anything that could be unusual that happens. You could build up your own strategy. So for example, like super simple, I guess, like Apple drops 10%, you want to buy it, right? You get a ping, your SMS, or like on your phone, basically, you know, Apple just dropped. But there's obviously like interesting stuff as well. Like we had unusual option activity, which was really interesting. like if someone buys a lot of call options or sells them or something weird is going on, you would also get a ping and lots of things you could do, lots of KPIs. We had like over, I think over 150 KPIs or so that you can work with. And we supported stocks, crypto and options. And we were planning to do bonds and just microeconomic KPIs as well. So that was Alpha Alert. So I was already really deep into it and really interested in it, obviously. So then Aquarius came along and first I focused completely on the quantum stuff. And then at some point, first of all, we got a contract, which is basically, you know, doing research in quantum finance. So that was really cool. And in general, also one of our investors, he's like a stocks guy. He's like a really in the finance space. He also has his own fintech, really cool guy. It's called Divizent. It's about, you know, getting back dividends. You know, when you get dividends from outside of your country. So let's say I'm in Germany, you mm-hmm. get them from the US or whatever. Oftentimes, you have to manually take care of double taxation. So mm-hmm. you lose money if you don't take care of that. Well, it's, you know, it's super annoying. And he basically completely automates that, which is a really cool software as well. So basically, we had this influence by our investor, and we were talking. Like I was talking with him, and I was like, "Man, we should do something like in the intersection." And I was hype. He was hype. Everyone was hype about it. So then we started looking a bit deeper into it, and basically there was other things, of course, other projects as well, so we didn't get too far into it. But one thing that we really looked into was this portfolio optimization thing that I talked about. So, you know, again, so you have your portfolio, a bunch of stuff in there, a bunch of stocks, and how do you weigh them? What, like, how much percent should each be weighed to optimize for return or maybe for safety, for less variance, stuff like that, whatever. And so this is something that we looked into, and this is also like the first service that I would say that we would offer if we were to really kind of go out. And this is also, I believe, could be a plan, a strategy that we could take, you know, really focus on that. And again, so we have also this contract where we're doing like deep research in quantum finance. Mm-hmm. And this project is currently running. And this project is also giving us insights into like different things, you know, that you can do, even active trading, you know. Of course, Aquarius is not planning to become like a hedge fund or anything, but I think just getting this research done and then getting this knowledge, we would rather position ourselves as, you know, someone who banks or maybe, you know, yeah, mostly banks, I would say investment banks, could use in the future, just as an API as a layer below for their research, for their, you know, whatever they want to do, right? That's, I think that would be something that we'd be really interested in, but it's still a long, well, not a long way, but still a bit to go, right? We still want to finish up this quantum finance research project, which is running until next year and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think that is a really interesting, like, let's say, intersection to go into. Finance also, if you look into the into current research, also into scientific research, what papers are out there, what results, is also, I believe, one of the first topics in general that will be disrupted by quantum. So there's obviously there's like chemistry, you know, there's logistics, there's all of these things. And I would say from what I'm seeing that finance is probably one of the first, maybe not the first, maybe, but one of the first that's going to be where quantum is going to have an immense impact. And as I told you in the beginning, right now you can mostly run POCs. So you run stuff and then you do some you can infer already a bit, you know, this is going to take 10 years, it's going to take maybe 3 years to become interesting. and that's what we also do all the time. But but finance is really the one that I would say is quite interesting. And there's some competition out there as well. There's multiverse computing, which they, so Aquarius is more general, like our offering is, you know, this platform and then services on top. Like multiverse computing, for example, is completely just focused on quantum finance. They don't do anything else really. They raise a lot of money as well now, and they're doing just that. They're just doing quantum finance. And they're really good at that as well. So I'm really impressed by the research output that they're putting out there. So the CTO, I think he's doing a lot of, you can just Google, I mean, I can just give you his name. You can Google him. He's doing a lot of, you can find a lot of papers on his Google Scholar. He's doing great work. So, but anyways, yeah, that's definitely an interesting topic to look into. And we're definitely taking a look into it for quite a while at this point.
So let's say Alpha Alerts was pretty much giving alerts on any kind of movements, not basically recommendations, but with Quantum adding onto it, you want to add not recommendation, but kind of a portfolio analysis.
Yeah, for example. Well, yeah, I mean, you could say that. So strategically speaking, yes, we are only looking into this right now. Yeah.
Makes sense. That's interesting. Definitely interesting. So, First thing is I would love to be a customer for that. If we can manage my portfolio, I'll be like, why not?
Yes, I'll take that with me. I'll ping you when we have the service ready.
For sure. So tell me about, because this is your second company, first company. So tell me about the experience of selling the first company and raising the money for the second one. Mm-hmm. So how was the whole journey?
Yeah, let's go into that. So in general, so the first company was really, I must admit, a small one. It was also a micro acquisition. So it wasn't like a huge exit and I'm super rich and I'm buying a Ferrari or whatever. No, but I think the experience was still good to have, right? So to know how this works. Selling it was, so one really, like, let's say, huge takeaway that I got from that is, you're going to get a few offers, right? If you put, so I put AlphaLerts for sale out there. I put it on a few platforms and I was like, okay, I'm selling it. And you're getting a lot of people who are interested in it, right? And I think you can really, and I read about this on, I'm reading a lot of Hacker News, the classic, right? So, and I've read this before already that usually you will get a lot of people who are kind of like interested, but they're not pulling the trigger. And you can tell immediately that they're not going to pull the trigger at all. And then there's like a few people who are, they come in, they know that this is, they need this strategically speaking. They need your, for as a module or something, right? They need your software or whatever, or the business. And they ask really deep, tough questions quickly. They want to talk about it really quickly. Like day one, they want to like kind of, you got to answer quickly. And then they just pull the trigger or not, right? So, and I had this exact, like, it was interesting, the exact same experience. I had a lot of people who are kind of starting the conversation with me and I'm like, yeah, cool. I mean, this is what it is. This is the offer. This is the business. I'm answering your questions. And then there was like one or two guys and one of them who in the end also bought the company, who like he got really like completely like deep into it. He spammed me with questions. Like he wanted to know everything about the tech, about like how many users do I have, like what's the business like, what's the SEO like, how much traffic do I have on each like certain like pages or whatever, what's working, what's not. And like it was so quick, it took like a few days and that was it. So from the first contact, like 3 days after, I think I had the money. So that guy was super fucking quick. And that's kind of my takeaway, that you can quickly notice really, you know, just take a step back and like analyze it, and you can really quickly notice like who's gonna pull the trigger and who's not, on and who's just wasting your time really. Okay. And you should take care of, you know, if you get 100 requests, don't waste your time with all of them too much, right? Just with the ones that you feel like they could pull the trigger. So that's kind of about the sell. And then the second thing about raising. So I think it really depends, of course, on the business, right? So we kind of already talked about it a little bit. So some businesses you can easily bootstrap, and then you go at some point. So let's take for example a B2B SaaS, like the classic. Like I love B2B SaaS. So basically, you start. You don't have really much costs, really. you start developing it. If you have a CTO, a tech guy, then it's free. Even you know. Then you get some first validation, some first customers. Well, maybe you did that before. You get some first paying customers. You get your first monthly recurring revenue. And at that point, I would say you go out, right? So you go on events. For example, Web Summit, where I was recently. It's a very huge, like there were 70,000 people. It's maybe you've heard of it. It's so huge, right? And it's a very, very general conference, but it's perfect for startups because there's a huge like focus and there's like many formats and events and stuff on how to get in touch with investors. And like you can book meetings, you know, you can, there's some lounges where you can go to and meet investors and so on. And basically, what you do is you plan ahead, obviously, and you say, okay, in Q3 2023, so next year, I'm doing the seed round. That's it. That's the plan. Until then, you will need, let's say, roughly 300K yearly recurring revenue. That's what a lot of people say is like the rough spot, maybe a bit more, maybe a bit less, to raise a seed round of, let's say, 2 million or something like this. And so you gotta do this, right? But what you do is you have some initial recurring revenue, right? You build a relationship, you build a newsletter. So you probably heard of that already. Going on events, using your network. The thing with investors is they get so many requests. So cold outreach, it can work, of course, and I do this as well, but it's not my favorite. My favorite is really, honestly, events like Web Summit. Slush is a really good one. Slush is, I think they have. It's also one of the bigger ones. I think 12,000 or 17,000, something like this. I think 12,000 also people going there each year. And you have to go like every, like in a year to like 10 of these events and try to get into like real personal contact with investors and then build, like, it's like a relationship, really. You're building a relationship. And if they get like, of course, initially, maybe they say no, then it's fine. But the ones that are kind of interested and they say, okay, this guy could become something, they just want to watch you for a year and they want to see like your progress, maybe, you know, your failures and help you through that. They would just want to build a relationship. And at some point, because I mean, in the end, they're putting in like €1 million or something. I mean, you're not going to do this to some random guy who just outreached, like did some cold outreach, sent you some random deck. And the decks, they're all really good. I mean, of course, the bad ones, they don't even look at the ones, but they get like, in the end, oftentimes they get like 3,000 requests. There's a huge pipeline. And in the end, they have five decks, five like founder teams where they say, okay, so I have €1 million. I need to invest this million in one of these five. And they're all perfect. They're all just absolutely perfect people or startups. How do they even, you know, how do you select? So it is like this, right? So this is kind of what I would say if you, for example, in your business, if you decide, okay, we're gonna fundraise, then you say, okay, this is like the day where we, you know, this is the date, this is where we raise. And you also tell this plan to the investors because they want to see this. They want to see this plan, of course. And then you go to, you do some cold outreach, of course. You use your network if you have anyone in your network. And then you do events. And that's kind of, you build this huge pipeline of investors. You build a newsletter and then you build a relationship. It's a long, like it takes a long time, but in the end, it, you know, it's worth it because you get funded. So that's kind of for B2B SaaS. Now, for I think for R&D, it's kind of similar, I would say, but it's also a bit different. At least in Aquarius, it was a bit different. You know why? Because so first of all, obviously we didn't have revenues. We did have some revenues, but it's not so easy like with B2B SaaS to, you know, kind of build it up and it is. Like very, very R&D heavy, right?
Yeah.
So what we did have though, I think, and that's unique for Aquarius, I would say, we did have we didn't have it yet, but we were kind of, let's say, a bit optimistic that we will get the publicly, at least some, because we put in our proposals to multiple publicly funded projects, and we were pretty optimistic that we will get at least one of them. Someone will be interested, and we did get a few at the end. And so we did have that. And the thing with these government contracts is that you have to finance a portion of it yourself. So they don't just give you the whole money and say, go ahead. That would be like an investment, right? And I mean, they are investing, but they also want to de-risk it a little bit. So they say, okay, you know, 50%, it's different, but let's say we give you 50% of the money. And the other 50%, you got to raise yourself with some investors or maybe from your own pocket, whatever you do. I don't give a fuck. You just have to get it from somewhere. So now we were like, okay, shit. And then, yeah, we started doing outreach mostly through our network because it had to be quick.
Yeah.
And we did in the end, obviously, get an investor. But what was different here is that you already kind of have, let's say, the big issue is this lead investor thing, right? That's the classic. Everyone is saying, yeah, sounds interesting. I'll invest, but not as a lead. Get me a lead. That's like when you get the lead, suddenly you have everything. So, and in this case, if you think about it like in an abstract way, I mean, I guess Germany was our lead investor because they put in like, they said, okay, here's a huge chunk of money. You just have to get someone who also puts in a bit more as well. And that's how it was. And this is why I think it was a bit easier, let's say, because we already had the lead investor, which was Germany. And then, so in our case with Aquarius, it was raising through network mostly. But in general, and I've had some experiences in doing that as well, how I explained it before is how I would do it. So with the B2B SaaS example, I think that's how I would do it. And that's how I do it. So yeah.
Got it.
So, but fundraising is an art, man. It's all about the relationships. It's really time consuming. It's an art and it's about the relationships for sure. And it gets easier over time. I think you just, if you're starting like with startups and everything, I mean, the first fundraising will be tough. Maybe you won't like hit your goal of, you know, you always have goals, right? You say, okay, I want to raise 500K or I want to raise a million. Maybe you're not going to hit it. Maybe you're going to just get 200K, but it's a start. And everyone that you get is for life because your second startup, you know, it will be easier. You already have some relationships. They can introduce you to more. It's really like this very slow exponential curve, I would say. Like it's really tough the first years and at some point it gets easier.
So how do you convince the investors about something called as quantum? Because investors are pretty much, and one thing I know about investors are is they're there to make their money.
Yeah.
They're not interested in what you solve. They just like, if you can make my money 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, I'm happy to invest. So how do you explain something like quantum to them?
Well, yeah, that's a good, I get your question. Yeah, I get your question. The thing is with investors, there's also, they do have, there's different types of investors, like, and that's a huge difference. So there's investors who say, okay, we're focusing, as I said, on B2B SaaS, right? Which is, again, this is where you get, you do projections, financial projections, and you're like, okay, yeah, we're going to 10x our money in like 5 years, whatever. So but there are also investors, a lot of them also, who only focus on deep tech, like really deep tech. And quantum is obviously like super deep tech. Like you cannot go deeper than that. Yeah. So they focus on that. And what they bet on, obviously, is the hockey stick, right? They bet on a huge disruption by the tech itself, right? So let me give you an example. For example, in AI, GPT-3, which is also one of the topics I really love, is so this came out of nowhere, it seems, but they were doing like OpenAI and DeepMind and whoever, they were doing research on that for years at this point. Now, just recently, like 1 or 2 years ago, like they released the API, right?
Yeah.
And I've used it before. It's great. Now, I mean, I don't know if they're swimming in money or not, but they should be, because now they're selling shovels. This is it. They are like, this is perfect. They have an API. They have a perfect, like, the GPT-3 has a huge impact. You can do so many things with it. And they must be swimming in money. This is what I mean by hockey stick. So it took so many years and, you know, nothing really coming out of it. And now, boom, they released the API. I've paid some money to use it. Yeah. A lot of people are paying money to use this API because it's fucking amazing. I've done a lot of cool shit with it. And Yeah, that's it. So this is what deep tech investors are betting on. And of course, you have to sell also a vision that includes this. And this is why we Aquarius, we're doing obviously consulting, which doesn't scale like this. Consulting, yeah. you kind of, you know, it's you're doing it, you get some money and you slowly maybe growing it a little bit. The platform is obviously the interesting part. And this is very similar to my example with OpenAI and with their API, where they're selling access to GPT-3. We will be selling access to Quantum at some point and everything abstracted away. It's easy to use. It has, it works, you know, it's easy, you know, it's just nice. And this is what our, this is what we're selling investors. And we believe also in that, that this is going to happen at some point. We will have this nice platform and we will be the ones, we will be OpenAI selling access to Quantum software. No, so that's what we're selling.
And that is where even you guys are heading towards.
That's exactly, this is where we're heading towards. Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Like, so I want to know is, like, definitely we are slightly over time, but if you have some time, we can take a bit more here and there. Yeah.
So, sure. I mean, yeah, I have some time. I still have some time.
Awesome. Awesome. So pretty much this is the last question and then we'll be moving on to rapid fire round.
Mm-hmm.
And, from there, we'll be closing a podcast.
Yeah, so sure.
My last question is, how much does a family play a role in doing a business of your own? Did you have a business background or this was something that you started, like it was something new?
So, yeah, that's such a good question. I absolutely love that you asked that. So, but maybe just to understand, with family, do you mean support from like parents and stuff? Like, basically, if I had already kind of a background from my parents' side, or do you mean also support from because I have a wife and two kids and like how this works? Or do you just mean both, really?
I meant both.
Both. Okay.
Yeah.
So, as for business, to be honest, so my parents were already always a bit entrepreneurial, but it never, so they were always, I noticed that they were always kind of discussing stuff like opening a restaurant, you know, doing some stuff with gold. I don't even know what they were thinking about there. I don't even know, but then my dad also started with this whole stocks thing and trading. So that's also, I would say, entrepreneurial in some way. It's not business, but it's also, and so they were already kind of trends, but they never actually built a big business or did a startup or anything. So in that regard, I would say they don't really have this background, but I can talk with them about business things and they understand it. So that's really cool. So even though they didn't build it, they understand what I'm talking about. And, you know, you can do some discussions with them and, you know, ping back some ideas, you know, and just talk with them about it. So that is really good. And what I would say is, in terms of background, extremely, extremely important and really unfair, honestly, is... And if you look at a lot of people who build businesses, a lot of them already had kind of, let's say, a well-off, at least they weren't poor, you know? And so we were kind of just middle class, not rich, not poor, just pure, like you can't be more middle class than that. Yeah. But my parents always gave me this, let's say, this feeling of safety that whatever happens, you know, they can still, you know, they can still, they'll be there to fix things and to, so I can still live there with my parents if anything happens. If you're extremely poor and you're only thinking about money, and you know, how do I pay the next month's rent and stuff, you don't have the mental capacity to think about business or entrepreneurship. So this is extremely unfair, but this is the truth in my opinion from what I've seen, that a lot of these people who build huge businesses, they already were at least middle class or well off, and they always had this feeling of safety. You need this feeling of safety to have a free mind to actually think about, you know, I'm building a business now, and if it to take risks, and if it fails, I mean, yeah, it's just shit. I lost a lot of money and time, but I still can live and pay the next month's rent. So that's one thing that I find really important, and I really love the question, by the way. And the second thing about like family and stuff, and my wife and the kids. So One time someone told me he wouldn't do a business with me because I have a wife and kids, because I can't commit enough time, which I find purely insane, because I'm the living example. And a lot of these people who have businesses, they have kids and everything, and it works out, right? It's all good. So this is something that I don't agree with at all. People saying, you know, with a family, you cannot do a business. What is important, though, and I agree on that, of course, the family has to be behind it. So they have to support you. So my wife, and so she likes to discuss startup things. She's also doing her own project now, which is really cool, in the teaching space and in ed tech. So she's starting and I'm helping out, and, you know, I'm helping her. She's like, okay, how do I build it? So she's rather non-technical. So she has a background, but she doesn't like to program. So I'm the tech guy, and it's great, of course, for her since I can help out with everything. Now I can tell her how to do it, how to find a cheap developer stuff, you know, to kind of delegate a bit. So you have to have, the family has to support it and, you know, be interested in it and believe also in the vision that you're not doing it for yourself or something. So I'm building this for the family, for my sons, that they have something at some point that they can also build, that they have a safety net, they can build own startups at some point. This is my biggest wish, that they build something themselves. And, you know, if this is your vision, you're building something also for the family, then the family will support it. And that's it, right? Really cool question that I really love.
Got it. But I really like the answer as well. It gives me a new perspective of it, like, you know, about entrepreneurs and let's say,
yes,
about your journey and what do you think about business as a whole? And like, you know, because family indeed for me also plays a really important role, whether it's mental support, whether it is financial support, whether mental support, I also mean by mental peace. And like, yes, you know, even if everything goes south, you know, there is somewhere that you can still call home.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, totally agree.
Awesome. So coming on to our rapid fire question, it's just a one word answer.
Yeah.
And if required, we can, I'll ask for explanation. It's just 3-4 questions. So now, in this whole discussion, we talked about finance, we talked about AI, we talked about quantum. So if you have to choose one out of three.
Quantum.
Okay. Evident. Then second is speed or perfection?
Oh, definitely speed.
That's
totally my philosophy. I love the speed. You have to be quick, and you can still iterate, fix things, break. How do they say? Move fast, break things.
Yeah,
that's how I like to operate as well, for sure.
So I understand this because this is the businessman inside you talking.
Yeah,
because I've talked to researchers and they generally prefer perfection.
Yes. Yeah. That's true. That's true. Yeah.
So a team of averages or an expert, high maintenance individual person? So let's say if you're building your team.
It depends. It really depends. Sorry that I just don't say one word, because it depends. For deep tech, I would say individual and someone who's really expert. But for B2B SaaS, I would say, because the tech is not so important usually, often, I would say a team of averages. So it really depends on what's your business.
Got it. So money or power?
I guess money. Both are not so important for me, but I would say money then, and that, and if it's one of those two. Yeah.
So from this, pretty much we come to an end to our podcast. And thank you so much, Daniel, for, you know, taking some time out and sharing your thoughts with me and with our audience. And it really means a lot to us.
Dude, I had fun. It was really great. You're a great guy. And I mean, it's a cool format and you're doing cool stuff. I enjoyed it. It was a really nice conversation. Good questions as well. So yeah. Indeed. Nice. Thanks, man.
Thanks to you too.